From Vermont Public and the NPR Network, this is Brave Little State. I'm Josh Crane. Now, whenever I have friends or family visiting, I try to get them out on a hike. And pretty often, that means I take them to the trail at Guile Mountain. It's close to where I live. It's a short hike, but there's a great view from the top. I know it well. What I didn't know, until I Googled it last week, is that this bit of land is located in the Norwich Town Forest. I learned this because town forests are the focus of today's winning question. And it turns out town forests are all over Vermont. Literally, I went for a pretty short drive earlier today, and I swear I passed signs for like 3 different town forests. And yet, I've done that drive a million times, and I've never really noticed them before. We tasked Lexi Krupp to learn more about town forests. Lexi is the science and health reporter at Vermont Public, and she's a regular here on BLS. Here's Lexi.
There are 252 cities and towns in Vermont, and there's a group of people dedicated to visiting every one. It's something Anne Wallace started doing with her husband a few years ago.
We are extremely non-methodical about it, but we go to places that we don't know much about and have never maybe even heard of.
And whenever she visits a new town on the list, she makes a couple stops.
My favorite thing to do is to visit the town library, the town clerk, and if there's a state park nearby. And then some places had town forests.
Town forests. These are usually just what they sound like. Forests owned by towns. Often pretty big, sometimes hundreds or even thousands of acres, but not always. Sometimes they're small, oddly shaped pieces of land. They could be owned by a school or public utility. As Anne kept seeing signs for them on her tour of towns, they became these mysteries on the municipal landscape.
I thought, what is the deal? I mean, really, literally, what is the deal with town forests? What's the history? Why are they there and why or why not?
There's no complete accounting of all the town forests in Vermont. But as best we know, about 2/3 of towns have one. Many have more than one. And each town forest has its own idiosyncratic history of how it came to be. Old church properties or hillside farms that couldn't keep up with local taxes. Some have been sold or lost, forgotten by the collective memory of town government. Others are brand new, like the forests in Richmond, Huntington, and Woolcut. And even though winning question asker Anne has noticed town forests in other communities, she wants to know what about her town, Bristol, in Addison County.
I don't even know, I'm really ashamed to say, I don't even know if Bristol has a town forest. I thought I could call and ask, and then I thought, no, I'm going to let Lexi do that research. I don't think it does.
Well, I did do the research, and Bristol does have a town forest. But there's a good reason Anne hasn't heard of it. It's located entirely within a different town, Lincoln. I head to this little sliver of Bristol inside the neighboring town of Lincoln when we come back.
Support for Brave Little State comes from the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department, encouraging donations during tax time to the Non-Game Wildlife Fund to protect the eastern meadowlark, American marten, and other vulnerable species in Vermont.
Bristol's town forest is at the end of Waterworks Road in Lincoln. It's a skinny tract of land along a stream at the base of Mount Abraham.
Hello! How are you?
I visited recently with local forester David Brin.
Well, it's kind of a temperate hardwood rainforest, but it's this is where yellow birches just love to grow.
Maple syrup lines crisscross the surrounding woods. It's a dense forest, but there's a wide path from an old logging road.
Further up, you get hemlock. They prosper up in these kind of cooler, moist places.
David was the Addison County Forester for many years. Now he runs a nonprofit dedicated to forest conservation. And he tells me the tale of how the town of Bristol came to own this piece of Lincoln. It dates back to the early 1900s, when Bristol had a problem. They wanted to expand, but nearby springs didn't supply enough water for the growing village. So some townspeople came up with a plan.
They started looking up in the hills, and this piece of land was available, and they engineered this thing.
The plan? Build a pipe that would carry water from the mountains in Lincoln down to Bristol. The town bought the land and hired workers from Europe.
Imagine, 1905, there's a bunch of Italians here digging a ditch.
They started in August. The work was hard and dangerous. Eventually, the workers asked for a raise. When they didn't get it, they went on strike. But it was too late. The pipe was nearly done. The town finished it without them. There was a big party to celebrate.
The town was joyous when they turned on the pipe down there and opened up the water. And it changed the economy of the town.
That pipe is still under the ground here, but it's been years since it supplied water to Bristol. The town found other places to get it. And they've also found other uses for this land. Over the years, they contracted with logging companies who chopped down trees here. And during an energy crisis in the 70s, when imported fuel prices were really high, the forest became an energy source for locals.
We did this thing, the county foresters said, we'd go out and we'd mark little three-cord lots. And people would come, and they paid a nominal fee, and they'd bring their picnic baskets and stuff and their wheelbarrows. And it was their family would go out, and they'd cut their firewood, and they'd load it up, and they'd take it home. It was mighty sweet. And we got some really great forestry done. You know,
families with picnic baskets haven't harvested firewood from here in a long time. Like a lot of town forests in the state, Bristol's has shape-shifted over the years to meet the changing needs of the town. Nowadays, this area is mostly used for walking, sugaring, and this time of year, skiing.
How's the skiing?
Sorry we ruined your tracks.
We run into Lorne Cochran as we're walking down the trail.
Well, it's a great day for it.
It is. It's so nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, these humps have made it pretty interesting.
Yeah.
If you didn't catch it, she says these humps have made it pretty interesting. The humps she's referring to are like earthen speed bumps on the trail. Not great for skiers, but very helpful for erosion control. And they're here because of David.
Well, you're talking to the guy responsible for the humps.
Oh, I understand the rationale, but from a skier's perspective,
yeah,
like it's the coming down.
There are 35 of these humps, and they're brand new. Construction finished this summer. The idea is to slow down water during big rainstorms and help prevent flooding and improve water quality downstream.
It's kind of a thing between human use and ecological.
And so this series of humps, the technical name for them is broad-based dips.
You know, like every dip along this road.
I think broad-based dips are a work of art. I love them. They give me goosebumps.
So that's one town forest, owned by the town of Bristol, located in the town of Lincoln. Historically used as a source of water and timber and firewood, and more recently for sugaring and skiing and flood control.
It's sort of like indicative of how like weird and random their histories can be.
Which is part of the beauty of them all. They're totally weird and random, and sometimes they're complicated, but they're all local. And that's the cool part of it.
Because they're so weird and random, the term town forests can be a little hard to define, even for the experts.
It's a little elusive, and it's it means something different to everybody.
I've heard people say, well, that's not a town forest. That's a park because we recreate there. Or that's not a town forest. That's a conservation area.
Julie Frost and Cecilia Danks study community-based forestry at the University of Vermont. Cecilia says there are lots of ways towns ended up with town forests.
I think at different eras, they came from different places. And in any given era, there wasn't even one main use that people were looking for. They've been sort of multiple use spaces since their inception.
Some forests were originally part of the town poor farm, like in Callis and St. Johnsbury. Or in Sheffield, the town bought up farms on a remote mountain road and planted trees there to avoid having to plow. Other forests date all the way back to towns' founding charters. In 1915, Vermont even passed a law encouraging towns to create town forests.
And there is already a strong conservation movement coming out of the late 1800s being really worried about our denuded landscapes. So, you know, part of it is, can we encourage towns to purchase property to grow timber on or to replant trees on or to let regrow?
Cecilia said this movement wasn't just about planting trees. A lot of these bigwigs in government were thinking about recreation, too. And this wasn't just a Vermont thing. Town forests were popping up all over New England. And all over the country, people were talking about public lands.
As different federal lands were being protected around that time as parks or national forests, local communities were like, well, we can do that too, especially, and it really took off here in New England, which had been settled for a long
time. Cecilia is sort of obsessed with town forests. She was part of a group that helped establish a town forest where she lives in Richmond. And as part of her academic research, she's on this quest to track down every single one.
I'm committed to getting to 100%.
The project is called the Vermont Town Forest Census. She's gotten funding from the U.S. Forest Service. And she's not starting from scratch. The project is a big update to a survey from 2015.
For this project, and she showed it to me, and I was like, that sounds really, really interesting. There's a lot of different components. And I came from a
Julie Frost is a graduate student doing the research. She's been contacting every town in the state, reaching out to town clerks and anyone else who might know about these forests. And accounting for every town forest in the state is harder than it may seem. Like recently, she reached out to a town clerk to ask about their forest.
And she emailed back and she said, we don't have any. And I said, oh, politely, you know, can you check again? And she got back to me and she said, oh, you're right. We do have that parcel and it is forested and we forgot about it.
Besides trying to find town forests, the other part of Julie's research is to figure out how they're being used. Like in West Windsor, the town forest is part of a ski hill. At Barry's Forest, there are a bunch of mountain biking trails. In Moortown, the elementary school uses the town forest, and it's owned by the school district. And then there are some towns that still don't know exactly what to do with their town forest, because they're brand spanking new.
It wasn't on the market, but it just seemed like such a great parcel.
That's after the break. Welcome back to Brave Little State. I'm Lexi Krupp. And this is Jamie Schulte.
This is a new, fairly new building, by the way. And we have this lovely view.
We're at the Moncton Town Hall, and it is a lovely view. Definitely the nicest town offices I've ever been to.
This is where we did a lot of our community meetings.
Jamie spends a lot of time here. He's not a town employee, but he's very involved.
And I'm on the Development Review Board and the Conservation Commission, the Agricultural Natural Areas Committee, and the Town Forest Committee. So that is probably too many, but it is...
He joined the Town Forest Committee when it got started in 2019 to explore the possibility of establishing a town forest here. That's because for years, the town has wanted more community spaces. There's a park with soccer fields near the school, but not many places with forests and wetlands that are publicly owned. It took them a while to find a property that might work, They ended up cold calling a timber company, A. Johnson, about buying this odd-shaped piece of land on the southern edge of town that borders a big conservation area.
It wasn't on the market, but we approached A. Johnson about it because it just seemed like such a great parcel, and they were receptive to talking.
Talking led to the outlines of a deal. 445 acres for $1.1 million. The money would come from a combination of grants and federal funds set aside for the town from the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA.
The town's portion was definitely less than 20%, and, you know, that's kind of a screaming deal when you think about it for having this.
Before they jumped at the deal, the committee sent out postcards to every voter in Moncton, asking whether they supported the idea.
This is all the actual postcards we got back.
Moncton voters gave Jamie and the rest of the committee the thumbs up. Some sent their postcard back with a note.
So many reasons to support this, from recreation to preserving natural habitat. Moncton Town Forest, that's the best reason. I mean, some of these pretty nice.
So just a few months ago, in November, the town officially purchased the property. Now that they have the land, they've got to figure out what to do with it.
We're working on that, but it's complicated. There's so many things to include and balance, and like we got
things like whether to allow horses and dogs, leashed or off-leash, hunting, trapping, mountain biking, how to protect the local population of eastern rat snakes and other wildlife.
You got to fit all those considerations together, and it may be that not everything makes sense.
They're going to write up their ideas and get public input. And not everyone is going to be happy with all the decisions they make. Like, for years, people have ridden their ATVs there. That's no longer allowed under the terms of the purchase. But since the town acquired the property, Jamie has noticed an uptick in activity.
You know, every time I go there, it seems like I run into at least one person that I know, you know, and a few that I don't. And so that's kind of good, right? And yeah, it's definitely a new gathering place for people.
The new Moncton Town Forest property is a short drive from the town offices. There's already some existing trails.
So it looks like a couple people have been here since we had snow this morning.
At one entrance is a temporary sign. It says, "Welcome to the Moncton Town Forest."
Here we are. Here's what you can do and please don't do.
And at the bottom of the sign is a note.
We will be planning a community celebration in the spring of 2025.
That's the plan.
So even though the particulars are still up in the air of what exactly this town forest is going to look like, Moncton is throwing a party. A party to celebrate their new forest. They just have to sort out parking.
Thanks for listening to the show. And thanks to Anne Wallace of Bristol for the great question. If you like what you heard, please follow the show in your favorite podcast app. Like, actually hit the follow button. Or maybe the button says something like add podcast or subscribe, or there's just a little plus icon. You can also rate us and leave a review in Apple Podcasts. Like this listener who wrote, "Brave, big podcast. Wow, you guys really make the list of my top podcasts. You actually take the time, do the research, and cover the topics of this lil but extraordinary Green Mountain state of Vermont. Thanks so much for that review and for helping other people discover this show." This episode was reported by Lexi Krupp. It was produced by Burgess Brown and edited by Josh Crane and Sabine Pooks. Our intern is Catherine Morrissey, and Angela Evansy is our executive producer. Digital support from Sophie Stevens. Theme music is by Ty Gibbons. Other music by Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to Larry Bush, Neil Maker, Bob McCullough, Callie Brin, Michael Giamuso, and Reg Dearborn. Also, Cecilia Danks' team at UVM is still looking for responses to their town forest survey. We've included a link in the show notes. Brave Little State is a production of Vermont Public and a proud member of the NPR network. We'll be back soon with more listener-powered Vermont journalism.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.